Can I ask you a personal question?
Okay.
If Willem Dafoe showed up to your house in drag,
I would know. It was Willem Dafoe. I would know as a man. That just guy, the
ugliest woman ever.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of I Finally Watched. This is David.
And this is Alon. And I finally watched the Boondock Saints.
You're doing more of like a Braveheart thing than a Boston Irish thing that's going on in the movie.
I'll get into it. I have to, like, Sean Patrick Flannery.
That is still, yeah, you're still like
Norman Reedus.
So I think this is like a perfect definitional movie of a cult classic.
Yeah, and definitely. There's
a lot of reasons like surrounding that. But like when I was in high school and college, I just remember I used to fucking watch this movie all the time. And I don't remember the day, but I remember my brother, I was talking to him about this movie and he had watched it so much too growing up. And he was just like, you know, I watched that recently. That movie's not very good. I was like, what? Are you serious? And then I haven't really watched it since. And then I decided, you know what? Let's figure out if it's good, me and Alon, on the pod. And I mean, there's so many beats that are like ingrained in my head from this movie. And obviously, like watching it this time with like an eye to kind of pick things apart, there's some stuff in here that's not great. But I still was like, it's a very fun movie, and like I enjoyed it.
It is very fun. So this is the first time I'm watching it, and I've heard a lot about it, but I've seen clips, but I don't think you can get a true feel for the way this movie is edited by just like a standalone clip. And I feel like to a certain degree, especially with Willem Dafoe's character, there's a lot of memes that have sprung from this film, but. There's a couple things I'll say is that one, I don't think it establishes the brothers' individual personalities very well. You get like, oh, it's, you know, the thing, their motivation kind of, and then their purpose. But as far as like a character thing, it's like these characters are pretty flat. The only one that's actually like a fleshed out character is Willem Dafoe. And we will get into that later. However, they are likable, and it's funny because like this is before Norman Reedus hits his Walking Dead fame, even before his Blade 2 fame, and there's something about them that they're likable, but the way this movie is presented and the way this movie is cut, color graded, sound design, music, everything, there's such an amateur feel about the film that when you're watching it in the beginning, I was just like, is this a parody? Is this like a spoof of something that I'm not aware of? And I'll give you the perfect example is that in the beginning, when that really shitty detective is trying to like be all cocky and explaining the crime scene of the serial crusher.
Freaking guy.
He's walking back and forth, and I couldn't tell if the acting was so bad that it was good, or if it was so good that he was a bad detective. I was like, is this guy nailing the fact that he is not a good detective, or is he a bad actor doing a poor job of pretending to be a detective? I could not tell for the life of me.
I mean, I think it's a fine line. You know, with most things like that. So a little bit of the backstory in this, because I don't even think you knew this. And I think a lot of people who were really into this movie knew this at the time. So this is written, directed, and scored by a guy named Troy Duffy, who wrote this script while he was a bartender in LA, got it shopped around, and got offered a ton of money from Harvey Weinstein to make this movie.
You know, if that guy offers you a ton of money, you better do whatever he asks.
They offered him a ton of money, and Harvey also was like, I will buy the bar that you work at and give it to you. It was like part of the deal.
Oh my
and
God.
And then apparently, allegedly, whatever I can say to avoid defaming Troy Duffy, but the story goes that he's a huge asshole and really hard to work with.
Allegedly.
And that he burned the bridge with Harvey, and the script got put into turnaround. He got the budget severely slashed, and then, you know, and then he put the movie out.
It's always these fucking guys that they're like absolute nobodies, and they think they're sitting on a real gold mine, right? And they're just the biggest assholes. I mean, not saying that Harvey Weinstein's probably the easiest guy to get along with, but, you know, I just feel like if you're a nobody dude who's shopping around a script, you just should be fucking nice.
So, yeah, I would concur with that. Then this movie came out in 1999. It was being shopped around either Cannes or Sundance. I can't remember which one I read. 1 month after Columbine. So no one wanted to touch this movie because you have these fucking guys in all black just going into places and shooting people.
You know what this movie reminds me of is like as a kind of like the plot of it is The Punisher.
Yeah, I guess a little bit. I'm cooking right now. So they got a distributor who put it into like five theaters for like a week. So this then sort of became this underground thing where you had to like get a copy of it like overseas. And so it eventually sort of developed this cult following almost because it was hard to watch because no one wanted to touch it after Columbine. And it actually had me thinking that if this movie just came out into theaters, gets panned by critics, people go to see it and they're like, what is this? That I feel like the taboo of it, it was hard to see, all of that. And so like you put so much work into seeing it that when you finally do, I think actually like benefited the movie and like greatly to like the get this cult status that it had.
Well, when you said this guy directed, did the music, edited, you know, the whole enchilada, it reminded me of Tommy Wiseau. And I'm like, oh, difficult to work with, you know, basically did it all himself and then ended up being kind of bad, but we'll get into how good this movie is later. But and now like The Room, which is like universally, you know, it's a bad film, everyone agrees, but it's culty and everyone kind of like likes it now, right? And I feel like that's kind of what happened to it on a lesser degree is, and I mean having Willem Dafoe in your movie doing all the things that Willem Dafoe does in this movie cannot hurt your movie.
But I mean, even Billy Connolly, too, as Il Duce, right?
I don't know who that is.
Well, I mean, he's mostly known for his comedic works, but like he took this part because he got to play a badass. But a lot of people know who that is. So I agree. Willem Dafoe agreeing to be in it is like what really kind of sets it apart and like gives it, you know, and gives it sort of the gravity that you want. The names of the people who almost were put in this movie is actually pretty fascinating, and we'll talk about that at the end. But I think we should just jump into it. And I think this is going to be a fun episode just from a 1,000-foot view, because I love this movie still, but there's so much to make fun of.
Oh, and my like, God, yeah.
So it starts out in a church, and this scene is super confusing because they get up to go to the front of the church. It's supposed to be
one guy that's like scared of them.
Well, so the little girl's like staring at them like, oh, it's them. And then like the priest is like going to say something to him. He's like, why are you walking up here? And another priest's like, no, don't do it. Don't just leave him alone. And you're like, why? And it's like it almost makes it feel like that scene happens after the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's like it. That scene is so out of context for the rest of the movie because it makes it feel like they were already established in this neighborhood. It's like a fucking Daredevil walks up, right? And it's like, oh no, we can't talk to Daredevil. And then he kisses the foot of Jesus statue and walks out of there. And then it cuts to, you know, well, in the beginning, he was just known as Matt Murdock, right? Like, it's his origin story. But it's just like throwing these brothers in, like, they're not vigilantes yet. They're just like a couple of punks that get into bar fights at this point, as far as we know.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, it's the scene kind of contextually doesn't make any sense. I mean, maybe it's the point of it, if you ask the writer director, was trying to establish, like, these guys weren't really nobody in this area. Like, people did kind of know them and they had sort of a reputation, but like nothing else sort of gives us that.
Well, there's a line, and I'm wondering, like, what is the purpose of this movie? Like, what was he trying to gain by, like, making these characters in this way? Because, like I said, it felt very Punisher-y. The Catholicism in all of it felt very Daredevil-y. It's like, was this guy trying to make his own superhero franchise? I mean, there's a line in the movie later where he's like, you know, kids will put up Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, and these guys and the Saints on their wall, right? Like, it felt like he was really trying to push that these guys were like the next superhero duo.
It's actually really funny is thinking about that my little brother bought me Boondock Saints posters 1 year for like Christmas, and they're still in my like childhood room, like rolled up. And I was like, I'm not putting these on my wall. Like, I mean, it's like, you like the movie. I was like, yeah, but not enough to like
just sexy Norman Reedus on your wall.
But like two of them. It's the main motif of my room is going to be Boondock Saints.
That would be so like you, though. I'd be like, no, actually, but yeah.
I gotta send you a photo of my childhood room, because there are four posters that I bought from like a college sale, like the the first week of college when they're and like they've hung up there since 2005. Like, they have not, like, that has not changed in that room. And one,
I have
of
to
them,
ask you, are they are they push pinned on all four corners?
Yes.
Okay.
One of them is a Starry Night, obviously.
Oh my god. Okay. I don't know why that was the funniest one.
One of them is a helicopter shot of Rio de Janeiro. The other is Muhammad Ali, I believe, knocking out Sonny Liston, I want to say. But it could have been someone else. And like, the reason I have that one up there, this is so far off of what we're talking about, but I watched this documentary one time, or it was like a short about the photographer that took the famous photo of Muhammad Ali, and like all the other photographers that night fucked him over and made him sit on the other side, including this one guy that it was like, I guess, his arch nemesis or whatever. And in the photo of Muhammad Ali knocking him out, this famous photo that this guy got because he was pushed to the other side of the ring, is his arch nemesis' head in the crotch area of Muhammad Ali, like in the, like one of the most famous sports photos in history. It's just like, that's why I put it up there, because I like that story.
I like that story too. What was the fourth one?
It was some like weird fucking, like, I don't know. I'll send you a picture of it. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a castle, but like one of those things where it's like the walls are moving in one direction and then another. It's like one of those figures that illusion. It doesn't make sense. Like, it's not structurally, doesn't make any sense. So anyway, that was the fourth one. So back to the movie. This also starts with them hitting a woman after the rule of thumb thing, which I think she overreacted. I don't think many people know that the rule of thumb was about how you could beat your wives with a stick. Like, I never knew that.
That woman is the coach from Glee.
I mean, obviously, like, you can't be punching women. And it's funny too, because like their dad is like, well, he'll knock a woman out instead of shooting her, I guess. But what's funny is when Norman Reedus punches her, the fucking foreman in the back just like, oh shit. Like, his reaction is so like one of the best extra acting like in the movie.
It is good. I do want to say that I came in here, started with the intro with kind of a really bad Irish accent, but I think it's still on par, if not better, than Norman Reedus's Irish accent in this.
He gives up a lot of times.
He does. I mean, it does come in and out strong. I want to mention overall, I watched this movie with Taylor, and she did not want to watch a movie that night. And she was just like, you know, I'm going to make a bet with you. I'm going to stay until I recognize someone, and then I'm going to leave. And then, of course, right off the bat is Norman Reedus. And she was like, all right, I'm out. I was like, no. Just stay just a little bit longer. And as soon as she saw Willem Dafoe, she's like, fuck, I'm staying for the whole thing. And it's so weird because this is not her type of movie at all. But she was enthralled with it from beginning to end. And it's like, how could you not be? Because this movie is so entertaining with the many twists and turns that it takes. Like, this movie, I think a lot of people think that movies that are made now play it very safe. You cannot say that this movie plays it safe. And one thing I really loved about this movie is the editing. It's like the ones where it's like, because in the beginning, me not knowing that they cut back to like the fights later on, they were like setting up with a bar fight with these Russians, and they skip out and they go to the alley where the bad detective is doing his monologue. I was so disappointed in that we missed that fight, that I was so elated when I realized we were going to cut back to it and then watch it play out all the way through. I think that's like such a strong and like original point in the film.
What's funny, like, none of the, so this, the reason this movie is exciting is because it's just a series of fights, like shootings, bar brawls, you know, just, that's what it is. It's a series of like action set pieces, but each one is shown and edited in a sort of different way.
Yeah.
Even to the point of like the one in the jerk off station, you like think it's done and then it goes back, and it's, yeah, like, I don't know, that is probably the, like, the thing that recommends the movie the most to me, is like the way that is done. The other thing too, and you brought this up, that the Willem Dafoe character is sort of, you know, you saying how we talked about Kyle Chandler being the smartest character in the world in what,
Godzilla King of Monsters.
And you made the joke about Willem Dafoe, but he really is like a Sherlock Holmes character. But what I do think the writing is pretty smart in that it sets up things where like he gets things wrong because it just shouldn't work that way. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, right, when like one of my favorite parts is like the Greenlee like continually getting things wrong, and then at the end he's like, what if it was like one guy with six guns? He's like, when I want your fucking opinion, I'll ask for it. And then later on, he's like, it was one guy with six guns.
Yeah.
So just like, I think like a lot of it is actually written.
Probably my favorite part of the movie is when Greenlee was right that one time.
But also just like the fucking, like, hey, everything bagel, cream cheese. Like, just, I don't know. Fucking Dafoe is so good in this movie that like, without him, I don't think this works at all.
I was misinformed. I thought people also loved Boondock Saints 2, the sequel. And then you told me that, you know, people fucking hated it. And I watched the trailer and I was like, oh, that's why. Willem Dafoe isn't in it.
So I went with my friend Sam that you've met and one of her friends. And we came out of it and they're like, you know, it was okay. And I was like, what are you guys talking about? That was awful. I was like, that was so bad. I don't know if they're trying to protect my feelings about it, because I had been looking forward to that movie since it was announced. And I was like really jonesing for it. And that, honestly, I may have never watched the first one again after that movie came out. That may have been the moment where I was like, I think I'm done with them for a while.
But you said they recently announced a third one.
They did, and apparently Troy Duffy is not involved at all, which may be a good thing.
But the question is Willem Dafoe?
That would be, I don't even see, like, I'm not going to go back and watch the second. Do you think they'll retcon and just be like, that didn't happen?
Yeah, probably.
I would hope. We need to get back to this. So, after the opening, they go to their local bar and he's like, guys, I got to close it. The bartender's like, I got to close it down. because the Russians won't let me renew my lease. And he's got this funny thing where I guess he's, I don't know if you're allowed to make fun of this. I think this guy actually has Tourette's though.
Oh, yeah.
Like in real life, I think I read that the actor does, but either way, they play on his Tourette's, and he also mixes metaphors, like make like a tree and get the fuck out of here.
I do that. That's called a malindrome.
Yeah, oh, I know. Oh,
sorry, it's a malaphor.
I'm familiar with your work. We talk quite a bit. And
Taylor saw that part, and she goes, "Is that why David wanted you to go see the movie that bad?"
We should also say that there's this running, it's not a joke, it's just a truth, where I tell you guys to watch movies and an animal gets killed in it. And she just texts me and she was like, "Why do you keep doing this to me?" I was like, "What animal?" She's like, "The cat." And I was like, "Oh, the cat. That's right. I forgot about the cat." Which is like,
she said you were actually like genuinely apologetic about it. And she kind of like malfunctioned because she's like, "I don't know what to say when David's nice about something."
I actually even wrote in the notes, "Sorry, Taylor."
Yeah, that was devastating. And it took her like a full 10 minutes to process what happened. Like the cat blew up, right? And she just sat there. She sat there and she kept watching the movie. And I just watched her. And I was like, why isn't she reacting? And I just kept watching her and the movie kept going. And she just kept watching the movie. And I was like, what is happening here? And then all of a sudden, she goes, like her face becomes like a horror show. She turns to me and tears start forming in her eyes. And I go, yep, there it is. She realized it now.
Oh my God. So we think the Russians are about to fight our boys. And then it cuts to the next day. And it cuts to the next day in an alley with Detective Greenlee, who is one of the great characters in this movie too. And he's just explaining, there's a big fucking guy that beat, and then wham, wham, and there's like the toilet. He doesn't really understand how that happened. And then Defoe shows up with this sergeant who's just like, these are Russian mafia. I got to do this by the books. The FBI is here. And it's like, he talks in this like sing-songy
way. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And then Defoe, like, I love everything he does in this movie. Like, I have no notes. He fucking puts his headphones in and is listening to opera and like swinging his arms as he's like investigating this crime scene.
When he's explaining and just start laughing every time I think about this scene, when he starts pantomiming the shootout later on in the movie and it cuts to him at one point and he looks so strung out, he's like sweaty and emaciated and he's just like dancing to the beat of like the fight. I was just like, this is peak cinema. This is gold.
I do love some of the lines with him and Greenlee. He's like, "Who the fuck are you?" He's like, "That's who the fuck I am." He's like, "Give me a coffee." He's like, "What? Cafe latte. Twist the lemon." Like, just keeps giving him his order.
That is the most disgusting coffee drink I've ever heard.
Twist the lemon was a little odd. There's also, so Willem Dafoe is playing a gay character in this, but a very like masculine gay character in this movie. And I guess the director did that in part to like, because this is Boston and at this time, He thought it would be interesting to have that character, all these cops sort of like maybe questioning, undermining this guy. But then sort of towards the end, there is a little bit of an arc where they're just like completely bought in to Willem Dafoe, like everything about him. They're just like, you know, babes at his feet, like, "Oh, what do we do next?" And so, but there is this funny part where he puts his hand on one of the like the officers in like a uniform, and the detectives like bump each other. Like, "Are you seeing this?"
Oh, I must have missed that. Yeah. In the beginning, in the alleyway?
Yeah, in the alleyway.
Oh, I missed it.
And so then he's like telling them to look for water. And he's like, "Oh, this old lady said there's water on the fourth." By the way, I don't know when we see this. The production design on their apartment. I was like, I don't even know what this was supposed to be originally. Like, or where they actually filmed this. It's like the weirdest apartment space. It's just like one open thing with like the showers and the toilet right there. Just shit in front of your brother.
Well, he says something about those are illegal
housing.
Illegal housing.
He's like, there's no super.
It's so funny, dude. One of the best line deliveries of Willem Dafoe is the cops are like, yeah, there's this lady who was complaining on the fourth floor that her ceiling started leaking this morning. And Willem Dafoe's like, fourth floor, you say? Well, I guess we're going to the fifth.
There's also, it cuts to them getting off the elevator, and clearly Willem Dafoe has given his entire synopsis of what he thinks happened. And Greenlee's like, ah, no, no, that doesn't make any sense. He's like, huh, seems like I might want a bagel with my coffee. And then he's like, I'm not giving him a fucking bagel.
Well, because it shows them coming out of the elevator and or going into the apartment, if you can call it that, and looking. But you don't see what they see. Like, as the audience, you don't see what they see. And I guess what they see is just a fucking flooded, broken toilet situation. But then that's where it cuts to, like, from the bar the previous night.
It doesn't cut to that yet.
No.
Yeah, so first of all, he has this great line, and they open the apartment door, and he's like, I'm going to start the ass-kissing with you. And then it cuts to the guys at the hospital, and the bartender comes up, and he's like, this guy left his fucking thing here. And they then, like, are talking, like, how does he know? He, like, you know, or they're like, it's self-defense. And, like, yeah, he said that. Like, how the fuck does he know that? There's apparently a cut scene right here where some pimp is beating up a hooker.
Okay.
And that pimp is one of the guys in the titty room that he's like, oh, I've been waiting to kill this guy.
Oh, that kind of makes sense.
Because when he says that line, you're like, oh, who the fuck is that? And it's like, I mean, you don't need an explanation because it's like, it's just, they know.
Well, obviously you don't, because they thought they didn't and that's why they cut it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't question this director for his choices at all. So they go in. They go into the police station. I love the conversation between Dafoe and Greenlee, and he's like, Greenlee's like, these two are fucking scared. They're not going to be anywhere near here.
As they're walking into the police station,
he's like, we should string through the streets of Boston to try and get them to come in. They're like, you'd do it better with beer. And he's like, onion bagel, cream cheese. So funny. The interrogation is when we finally get the flashback.
Okay.
And we also learned that they basically speak like every European language. German, yeah. French, Italian, Spanish.
It's so funny because when we're in the flashback and they speak Russian to those guys, right? Taylor was like, how do they know Russian? And then the whole flashback happens. Get back to the interrogation room. And Willem Dafoe is right there asking the same question my wife is asking. How do you speak Russian?
There was supposed to be some backstory about their mother and the fact that these two are supposed to be playing twins.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so the mother stuff was cut. And then, yeah, like, I don't know if it's canon or whatever. I don't know if that's a thought I had at the end of this movie that I guess I'll just say now. This movie doesn't need sequels. You don't need anything else for this. Like, this
well,
was...
Well, now in 2024, it needs a TV show. That's about 10 episodes long on HBO Max.
To play the brothers now, though?
Oh, you still get Norman Reedus and Sean Patrick Flannery.
Well, Sean Patrick Flannery looks completely different, as I showed you in the photo.
So does Norman Reedus. They're like in their 40, mid-40s now.
Norman Reedus at least still looks like Norman Reedus. So they explain the whole thing, and then we finally get to see the flashback about how they easily won the bar fight. I like the part where Sean Patrick Flannery, whose name is Connor, by the way, it's said a couple times in this. I don't know what the other guy's name is.
I think it starts with an M.
Well, it's probably on IMDb, and it is Murphy. But they don't say their names that much.
They go, my brother.
Is he still working on
that? My brother.
So... at one point, he's like, no, leave him. He can take care of himself. And that's when he takes the bottles off of the wall and hits the guy over the head. They then just have the dude tied down and burn his ass.
Yeah.
Which is like, why do you not expect retribution? I love the next day when he's like, first of all, the Russians' plan is fucking crazy. Just shoot them both right there. What are you, a Bond villain?
I don't know. Right, I don't there. Understand, too. It's like, go and cuff yourself. All right, here's the crazy thing. They give him the cuffs to cuff himself on the toilet, and he actually does it, but they never check. Dude could have totally just fake cuffed himself.
No, no, he checked because he does. He like leaves it wide open and then the guy squeezes it shut.
Oh, okay.
Ivan Drago, whatever the fuck his name is. I love Norman Reedus's line after as they're taking him outside. He's like, "Why are you guys being fucking pussies about this? It was just a bar fight." It's like, you burned that guy's ass.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we see the jump and the hitting with the toilet seat. And
how heavy do you think that toilet? Could you do it? Could you walk up to the roof with the toilet attached to you?
I feel like this is like, yeah, I could. Toilets. I don't understand the layout of this apartment because it seemed like he just walked outside of a window that had a plank or something. Like, I don't really know. Did he have to climb more stores? Like, how far, like, how high did he have to go
up? I mean, maybe the fifth floor was the top floor.
Yeah, I don't know. But that would really hurt your fucking legs. Like, you might break those.
I'm pretty sure that when the top of the toilet tank fell, it hit Norman Reedus. Because that cut looked like it hit Norman Reedus, and they cut it like away from it. But I mean, I'm sure it's also made out of like plaster of Paris too. So
yeah, I love after they finish telling the story, they're like, "Yeah, can we maybe like lay low here for a day?" And the cop's like, "Oh yeah, you can. We have room for you. Can they stay?" And fucking Defoe's line of, "Oh, we'll have to check with your mom, but it's okay with me if your friends stay the night." Like, just so fucking good.
Now, here is like the main lore that I have questions about is this a call to Jesus when they're in the jail cell and they have the water leaking from the roof and it's dripping on their heads and they wake up in like a nightmarish state and they're like repeating their familial Catholic Irish prayer? It's like, is that when they decide, oh, we now have to become vigilantes?
Yeah, I don't know. The Catholicism of it all in this is, I don't know. I will say the priest scene is interesting where he's like, sort of like, "God forgive me for okaying this cop to allow people to be murdered." You know what I mean? He doesn't necessarily say like, "Yeah, it's okay," but he's like, "God's laws are above man's laws." And Defoe's like, "Yes, yes, I was feeling that. Okay, I will murder people." And the priest's like, "Oh, Lord, please forgive me." I don't know. That's like a super melodramatic scene where they're like water is dripping on them and they like almost as if like a spirit is coming out of them that lifts them up like from the middle of their body, like on the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little much.
I like when they walk out wearing the all black coats and the glasses.
Yeah. That's probably partially why this movie could not be released. So Rocco came to bring them clothes and like all the people in the jail know him. And then Rocco goes to his boss. His boss's underling is Ron Jeremy. And the director said, "I cast Ron Jeremy because everyone will know who he is, but no one's going to like admit to their friend after the movie, like, 'Hey, did you know who that was?'"
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. So I'm watching it and I go, "Oh, that's Ron Jeremy." And Taylor goes, "Who?" And I'm like, the porn star, Ron Jeremy. And she goes, "That guy is a porn star?" And I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "You watch Ron Jeremy porn?" And I'm like, "No, but like everyone knows who he is." She goes, "I don't know who he is." And I go, "Because you don't watch 80s porn, babe."
Like 80s music, you like 80s porn. I'm just imagining God, like, just like, "Yeah, I watch, the only porn I watch is Ron Jeremy. I don't care about which women are in it, but Ron Jeremy is a performer that I have to see."
Yeah.
I love his boss, Papa Joe. I'm not going to say that guy's a good actor, but I love him in this role as Papa Joe.
Like, it's a weird role. He's like, Ron Jeremy is there, like, you know, this guy, Rocco, and then Papa Joe's just like, I don't know what he's doing on the phone. Enthralled in the conversation? I don't know.
I love when he is yelling at the guy on the phone. He's, and the way he says, "You insignificant little fuck." The way he is, like, the cadence is great. He then says to Rocco, "I hear you're funny. Tell me a joke." And I gotta say, understand it's inappropriate and offensive, but the way that he says, like, Mexican, and then he says black guy, and they correct him to say a racial slur. And he's like, yeah, that's what I said. And he's like uncomfortable with that, but this is his boss, is like a funny scene. And then the boss laughs and he's like pantomiming the offensive joke. And then they, like, Rocco's like, oh, it's all good. And he's like, tell me one more. And Rocco's like, what? It's like, yeah, that was my only one.
I really thought Rocco was going to get a bullet to his head right there.
Well, I mean, Ron Jeremy almost punches him at one point because he makes fun of him. He's like, oh, I really enjoyed your show at Atlantic City or whatever.
Oh, it's really, it's a good one. What's really funny, too, is later on he refers to them as like the two fat little fucks. It's like, so, those fucking fat fucks are going to kill me, guys.
So next, the brothers have decided they need an arsenal of weapons. And they go to this guy and they give him jewelry, watches.
Well, they rob someone. They rob
the Russians. Ooh.
Oh, okay. They robbed. Oh, yeah, that's right. They get all the money from their
pocket. They give the guns, which is like you're giving those guns to get different guns. And then they give the fakest roll of money I've ever seen in a movie that I've never noticed before.
Yeah.
But it was real bad.
It wasn't even like Benjamin, like bad. It was a whole different type of person. It was not
a founding father.
It was not a founding father. It was like some sort of Indian spirit. I don't know.
So then he's like, oh, you know, we need a fucking rope. He's like, why do you need a fucking rope? You don't need a rope. And he's like, oh, really, Rambo? And pulls up the Rambo knife. And he's like, oh, fine, grab your fucking rope. And then this is a different way they do it. They cut immediately to Willem Dafoe at the crime scene. And I love, he's like, how many bodies, Greenlee? He's like, 8. Oh, fuck, 9. The guy, I forgot about the guy in the back. And he's like, does anyone else want coffee?
This is hilarious to me. I feel like they did it in a way where they could have like really honed it in, but it was good. It's where they fall through the air ducts and then they just spin and take out 9 guys.
Yeah, that is the great. And I love when he's going to the guys for their theories, he's like, oh, that's 2 solid theories that don't involve unusually large men. And he's like, all right. And the one guy's like, what's the symbology here? And he's like, the symbology means symbolism. Symbolism. And I love how he then says the guy's name's correct. He's like, oh, you're the only person that's ever gotten that right. He's like, it's because I'm an expert in nameology. So they dissect the crime scene, and then it goes and shows the fight in the vent. What's kind of interesting to me is he's like, it has to be 2 shooters because the angle is too harsh. But then when you show them shooting, their arms are like almost completely straight. Like it would have been very easy for one guy to shoot the way they shot.
I didn't notice that. I just totally believed him. I was like, yep, that makes sense. Although Rocco coming in as Jafar is really funny. And it's like, oh, we're going to fuck with him. And then they
that may have been your best take so far. Thanks. On the exit.
And then he comes in, they have a gun, they're wearing the mask, they have a gun to his face, and he's just like, I'm on your side.
What are we going to do? Laugh the last 3 to death? Funny man! So good. Yeah.
I'm so surprised that it took Rocco so long to realize that they set him up to die.
Well, and you can tell they knew for a while, and they're just like, all right, we're not gonna tell you right away. So then after this, Rocco's like, so what are you guys doing? And they're like, we're killing anybody you think is evil. And then I like when they tell Rocco, they're like, you got to take credit for that. It's really honestly the only thing you can do. Like, you can't tell them we did it because that's gonna be worse. And then he shoots the cat. Once again, sorry, Taylor. But the funniest line after he shoots the cat, is it dead?
I love when the girlfriend comes. He's like, is your girlfriend going to notice? He's like, ah, she's on way too many drugs to even notice. And then he tells her, she comes in, he tells her, I killed your cat. And she's all shooken up about it. Okay, this is like so many great lines all at once that comes out of Rocco's mouth. He goes, if you can tell me the name of that fucking cat, then I will shoot myself in the head right now. And she comes up with the name. And he goes, okay,
What color was it, bitch?
And then her friend said something, mouthed off to him or something like that. And he goes, I can't walk into a bar without running into seven guys, you fucked.
It's like, shut your fat ass, Janice. Yeah, he's very inappropriate, but also very funny. Apparently, like, the director just found this guy and was like, all right, you're just going to play yourself in this movie. This is not going to be a stretch for you. So they then after this have the conversation with him like, you were set up. He's like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. The line from Norman Reedus, I was like, this not delivered the greatest, but like, what kind of flowers you want at your funeral? And then he calls them and he's like, any news or whatever. He's like, catch you on the flip side is what he leaves them with. And then the next thing we see is him running in. He's like, pack your shit. We got to get out. And that's when he talks to her about the cat. And then this one just cuts directly to Rocco killing them, killing the guys. It just shows them kill them, which makes sense because after it shows that, it then cuts back to the guys and he's like, dude, we have to go kill Vincenzo, Ron Jeremy's character. And he's like, that fat fuck jerks off to the same titty dancer every Wednesday at 10 p.m. And I had the thought when he said that, it's not sad that he goes to this place to jerk off to a titty dancer, which that is sad. The sad part is that he has a 10 p.m. appointment on every Wednesday. This is like a scheduled thing in his week. That this is like the best part of his week. He's like, I go to do this Wednesday at 10 p.m. I was like, that is sad.
That is sad. That is sad. Or romantic. This is done differently too, where you mentioned this is where we think it ends with the explanation from Defoe, but we still get it in the end. It comes back to it. And Rocco is such a fuck up every step of the way, and his mask, like the mask gag is so funny. He like
okay, baby.
Tears holes in it and he puts it on. And then, you know, like the other ones are just professionally done, right? They're like professional ski masks, but this dude takes a sock and cuts holes in it. And they're laughing at him, but they're like, no, put it back on. It looks good. Put it back on.
You look tough, man. You look real fucking tough.
Come on. And so they go in, they kill Ron Jeremy, right? The brothers do. And then how the other two don't hear the gunshots is beyond me.
Well, they might have come in after that, right? Because one, they're silenced, but two, they might have come into the booth and then put the money in, which is
oh yeah, okay, you're right. So maybe that's the conveniency of that. But my favorite part of this scene is when Willem Dafoe is trying to figure out why bullets A and B are switched only twice on each side. He's like, the Ron Jeremy killing was very, like, very good shooting. But these two, very bad shooting. And in my head, I was like, oh, okay, it's Rocco. Then they show it. Then they show Rocco's like, please let me kill these two guys. So the brothers are like, okay, you got to prove yourself. Go ahead. And so they're explaining why A and B is, you know, on either side of the rooms. And they're like, why did the bullets switch? And they're Willem Dafoe and the other detectives are literally walking out of the scene. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, I know why. Because Rocco's an idiot. And he probably, like, crossed his arms to look cool in the moment.
Wyatt fucking Earp.
And lo and behold, he did that. And then Dafoe was like, oh, wait. And then he crosses his arms and he's like, yeah.
We got a fucking cowboy.
I
love, too, before that, and this is another, like, Greenlee getting something right. He's like, Defoe's like, but why kill these other guys? And Greenlee's like, well, what they have in common is all three of them are bad guys. So there's now three dead bad guys. And, like, Defoe doesn't tell him he's an idiot. He actually, like, sort of takes that in and yep. is like, maybe. And then he finds out about the diner shooting. And he's like, why the fuck did you not tell me about it? It was like, oh, it was totally like different gun, totally not expert. And, you know, then they go there and he's like, gets really pissed at them. He's like, I hate cold crime scenes. And he says the line, which is really cool. Let me know when you find the next body, because these guys aren't done yet.
Love when he's talking to them. And then he does the Green Goblin face. He's this is just a couple of years before he's Green Goblin, you know? And he's sitting at the bar and they say something to him. He looks at them. I'm going to have to back up a little bit for this one. He looks at them and just with the most complacent look on his face, he goes, fuck!
Yeah, it's good. So next we meet Il Duce, which is a great, great name for a hitman. A hitman that only kills bad guys. And they just apparently can just get him out of maximum security prison. They get him paroled like in a day.
I also don't understand this, is that the Papa character was like going to a retired ex-mob guy. And he was like, you need to get this guy out of prison. But it was his parole date and they approved him. I guess they were paid off to approve him, right? But yeah. This guy and the way they build this up is actually really good directing. He's brought out like fucking Hannibal Lecter, like caged, tied up, roped to the ground, rolled on a dolly. Like, it's so funny because they bring him out like he's this most dangerous creature. And then they're like, yeah, you're approved to go.
Yeah, you're good. It's fine. We've gotten paid enough. So he comes out and Rocco, we then cut to them where Rocco's like, I have the next guy I want to hit. This guy is a sick fuck. And you can tell, like, it is pretty good acting where he's like, I can't even think about that night anymore because of how like crazy this guy was. And he like just killed an entire family, killed children, killed a woman. And it then cuts to Willem Dafoe in front of this house and he's explaining it. And he's like, you know, first they took the wife. They went back to this guy, you know, his little poker area, his game room in the back. It's paid for with like the women and children he's killed. And they get in. They kill all these guys and then something happens and it shows that they didn't, you know where this guy was. He was in the bathroom. Rocco gets a shot off and then Patrick Flannery's like, no, he's got to fucking do it on his own. And then the way Norman Reedus rolls the cue ball to him, like, is pretty cool. And you're like, oh, okay, but what else happened here? And I got to say, like, it may be over the top, but the way they show Willem Dafoe sort of conducting in silence with the music as the firefight is happening. Troy Duffy was quoted as saying that he's like, yeah, this is just a total John Woo like ripoff for this scene. He's like, particularly like Face Off. But I don't know. I think it like is very effective and works.
I wasn't kidding when I said it was peak cinema. I mean, it was just like,
it was a firefight.
It could have just been one guy with six guns.
Greenlee, when I want the fucking Boston PD doing my thinking for me.
But no, it was so funny. And can I ask you, why do you think the dad did not recognize the sons or the other way around?
I think he had been away from them for so long. They should have clearly recognized him. Although he's wearing glasses, he has a full beard. So it's been years. So, you know, that makes sense. And you're just getting shot at.
It's like, wow, he shoots six guns just like our da.
Okay. I like that after they show this, the fucking forensics lady is like, there's a variable here that I'm not seeing. And fucking Willem Dafoe goes and smells it. He's like, it's ammonia, you dumbass. Like, how can you not smell ammonia? And then he finds the finger.
Rocco is so funny. He's like, he shot off my finger. And then they have to take the time to actually spray and like show them spraying the ammonia on the blood splatter. And man, Willem Dafoe, I don't think you gave it enough credit. Willem Dafoe goes ballistic about the ammonia. He's like, ammonia!
He's pretty upset about it. We then get to see them like cauterizing their wounds. There's a very central part where Sean Patrick Flannery is getting his, And then he grabs the back of Norman Reedus's head behind him.
I just want an explanation of what, like, an iron all by itself gets hot when you plug it in. Do they have to put it on the stove top too?
I mean, just probably just being thorough, I would imagine.
Why didn't Rocco just put his little nub on the stove?
They had to do it to him. He couldn't do it. He like could not handle it. Yeah. So he runs the fingerprint on Willem Dafoe does, comes up with Rocco. I love the fucking photo of the guy holding Rocco's hair back so you can see
his I also face. Love Willem Dafoe was like, no, 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 can't be him.
And then
like all the flashbacks of like him coming into the police station.
And then he decides to go get drunk. He goes to the gay bar where he like offends everyone there. And then Rocco
goes to confessional.
Well, yeah. And Rocco has just said, we need to take this guy out. And they're like, do not fucking touch him. And then there's the thing at the church, you know, that we already talked about. And afterwards, Norman Reedus is like, what happened in there? He's like, the Lord works in mysterious ways. It's like, oh, I planned this whole thing. And then they immediately after this call him, and then he's like, one guy with six guns, and they're like, we're going to hit Papa Joe tonight. And then Willem Dafoe just knows to go to the same guy that Papa Joe went to ask about Il Duce.
Yeah, I don't know. I was wondering about that too.
And he finds out, oh, like Papa Joe is ready for them. And this part is like, would you guys run out of money or time where like it cuts to Papa Joe in his house and like, we got him. They tried to get through the basement. Like I don't understand why we didn't see them get caught. I mean, you know,
that took me by surprise too. I was just like, oh, what happened? Well, but I guess we're just supposed to accept that they've been captured now.
And when they get caught, there's like 15 minutes left in the movie, and like a whole lot still happens after that. So it's
can I ask you a personal question?
Okay.
If Willem Dafoe showed up to your house in drag,
I would know. I would know as Willem Dafoe. I would know as a man. That
just
guy,
the ugliest woman ever.
I wrote down Willem Dafoe is a good looking guy, especially younger. He is one ugly woman, and and the way he fucking tongues that dude, just like, and then he's fucking writhing on the floor, give it to me. Oh, the guy's like, you want to go around with the champ? We'll go around with the champ. And then when his wig falls off, the dude's like, what the fuck? Kicks him in the nuts. And the way he grabs the gun and flies up, and his like he blows air out of his mouth to where it like quivers like a horse almost as he shoots the guy. And that's fucking Green Goblin right there in makeup.
Dude, he breaks, right? He's like, this is it. This is it. He's like, it's, what did he say? It's a show off. It's a showdown or something like that. And I was like, what is he going on about? But he was living by a code, by being a police officer, right? By doing things by the book. But now he's just killed this dude with no evidence, right? So now he's completely on the Boondock side because he broke the law. So it's just like, and then it explains why he's so like on their side at the end, in the very end scene where he like opens the door for them, gets them past the metal detectors, gets them into the courthouse. Well,
the other cops do too, right? They're like all in on it now.
Yeah, but that's his breaking point where he's just like, now I'm just basically one of the saints. And he went marching in.
By the way, one of my favorite lines is as Willem Dafoe is on the front step, the fucking guy's like, he always sends the most primo box. Which, like, as a young person, I didn't know that box was like slang for vagina. So watching it now and see, like hearing it, I'm just, oh my God, guy. He's like, I haven't been late for a week. I was like, the way you're acting, it feels like 6 months. Yes. Like, it feels like it's been a long fucking time for you. So by the way, Rocco dies, and some of the worst acting in the movie, Sean Patrick Flannery's like crying, screaming, no, Rocco, no, hold on. It's just real bad right then. And then they're performing like the last rites on Rocco. And Il Duce walks in, hears the prayer he taught his boys. So he comes up to them. They pull their guns. And then he starts reciting the prayer. And of all the reactions in this movie, it's the most subdued they've been the whole time. They almost give no reaction to, oh, hey, Dad.
Yeah.
No reaction.
We also see the tattoos on their hands.
Yeah, Veritas Equitas. And then it ends with a trial. And Papa Joe is going to get off. Everyone thanks. And the saints come in. They give this very screaming speech. There's one point the dad goes over to this girl who's closed her eyes. He's like, you must watch, dear. And then they shoot him dead. 3 bullets through his head.
Yep.
And then it sort of ends with this montage of people being interviewed. It's
really my favorite part is when they're all running hysterically out of the courtroom. And instead of the police running in or anything like that, it's just a bunch of reporters wanting to interview the hostages. And I'm just like, what in the world is this?
Yeah. I especially love at the end, the one like news interviewer, the girl's like, oh yeah, man, I like the Saints. I like the Saints. And clearly the other girl with her is supposed to cut her off at some point. And she cuts her. She lets her go on for way too long. And they cut her off. No, you shouldn't say that. Don't say that because you don't know. You just don't know. Don't say that. What about your mom? And it's like none of that made sense what you said. But they just kept it in the movie.
But a lot of it was like that too. Like one guy was like,
I'm ready to get busy. Get busy.
The other, like 70% of those people are like, no comment. I don't want to talk about it.
Like those saints were going to murder them. So, alternate casting. Troy Duffy expressed interest in Stephen Dorff, Brendan Fraser, Nikki Catt, and Ewan McGregor for the two of the brothers. There's this story that he flew to New York City to meet Ewan McGregor and offered him one of the lead roles. At a night out, Duffy got drunk and they got into an argument over the death penalty and McGregor passed on the movie. And this is in part what led to Miramax putting the film in turnaround.
Ewan McGregor is for the death penalty?
No, I think probably he would have been against it, if I would guess.
I'm just joking.
Troy Duffy in support. I mean, the movie's definitely about the it's about the death penalty a little bit. And then I guess Mark Wahlberg passed on this to do Boogie Nights, but I don't know how much he would have, if his schedule was free, if he would have actually done this. Then Troy Duffy, in some sort of interviews, dismissed several casting choices. He refused to meet with Brad Pitt because he'd already played an Irishman in The Devil's Own, where Duffy found his Irish accent unconvincing. I will agree, the accent, not that great in The Devil's Own.
But Norman Reedus was fine.
But also just like, you could have had Brad Pitt in this movie and you refused to meet with him, you fucking moron.
Dude, the guy sounds like a grade A asshole.
He rejected Keanu Reeves and Ethan Hawke, calling the former a fucking punk and the latter a talentless fool.
This guy's the biggest hack I've ever heard of in my life.
He just lucked into having Willem Dafoe in this movie. Apparently, Patrick Swayze, Robert De Niro, Sir Kenneth Branagh, and Kevin Spacey passed on Paul Schmecker. And then Miramax wanted Sylvester Stallone, Bill Murray, or Mike Myers, which...
For who?
For fucking Willem Dafoe's role.
Oh, okay.
Mike Myers is fucking absurd.
Serial killer?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no. Yeah, baby, yeah. Oh, dude, Austin Powers? I mean, Willem Dafoe basically went in there like Austin Powers. That would have been perfect, actually.
No, that's dead wrong. That's...
Or like Sylvester Stallone, like, he's a bullet through the wall.
When did you think you could do, like, why is it that tonight is your night to try out all these impressions?
You think this is a serial crusher?
That's closer to Bill Cosby than Sylvester Stallone, what you're doing currently. And somehow farther away now that you've done Fat Albert. So, I enjoyed this movie more than I thought I would, having like, you know, thought like not watched it for so long, but also liked it less maybe than I did growing up. But it's still like, I was actually kind of surprised that your reaction was so positive. I was like expecting you to be like, what is this bullshit?
You're watching this and you're like, oh, Alon's going to tear this shit apart.
But what I think it, and you sort of said this, and what, like, why this movie sort of holds up is it's just fun. Like, it's kind of like the sort of, like, you brought up The Room earlier, and it is sort of like the best case scenario for The Room, right? Like, you have this guy who sort of doesn't know what he's doing, but has been given a budget by a studio, and this is, like, maybe the best it could have turned out, and it's, like, it's a very fun movie with, like, Willem Dafoe in this is like one of my favorite performances in a movie, just like, because he just fucking goes for it the whole time. He's interesting. He's funny. Like,
and it, but I, you know, it's, it, I said this before, it's a risky movie. It's risky to do all those kind of, okay, every fight scene is going to be interrupted and then not shown and then shown in a flashback. But then every time we do that, it's going to be in a different editing style. That's super risky. Having Willem Dafoe play a gay cop from like the Bronx for like your demographic of who you're going to show this to, it's risky. But like the payoff is so worth it in the end, because I truly believe like the biggest crime a movie can make is it being boring. And yeah, there's a lot of like editing styles and acting decisions that kind of camera decisions that kind of show off the amateur niche of this movie, but it is so entertaining from one second to the next.
The biggest crime a movie can make is being boring.
Yeah.
So like if your Nazi propaganda film is entertaining, that's still better than if it was just boring. Well, thanks for listening to another episode of I Finally Watched. This is David.
And this is Alon, and I finally watched The Boondock Saints.